and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 216. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz. With me today, two friends, not three. Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy.
And James Jones.
John!
Yeah, we really thought John would be here, and he was planning to be, but he was so exhausted from the move that...
Has he bought a move now?
Because he can't be exhausted from something he wouldn't play.
No.
The sports champions is a real humdinger.
It's exhausting.
Well, I mean, it's hard to carry around all those sealed controllers and games that you don't ever use.
No, but between moving across the country and starting a new job, he just requested one more week to gather himself, to gird his loins for the gauntlet.
For the inevitable retribution he will have to suffer.
Anyway, we expect him back next week for reals.
I've got 4 weeks of material. It's go time.
This is actually episode 5 with that, John.
Is it really?
Seems
like,
man, a while.
I've got a whole football season of material for John.
Oh. The good news is our special guest is here. Not right now, but he will be here in the next segment, and we've already recorded it. I know that he showed up. I know that it happened.
It did not fall through.
And it was good.
It has already happened.
So you'll enjoy that quite a bit. I'll leave it a mystery.
Is the special guest Sammy Jenkins?
No. I'll leave it a mystery until we get there, but it turned out really well. I'm happy you'll like it. So, new business.
And it's not John, just to be clear.
No, although it's not John.
At this point, he practically would be considered a guest.
Yes. Well, next week, John. For new business, James.
Or he will die.
James, what do you want to talk about this week on new business?
All right, so I've not played a whole lot this week, so I'll just burn through some stuff. So when we last left our intrepid four hat-wearing heroes, they were at the entrance to the final boss. 1 week later, they are still at the entrance to said final boss.
Have you just not played the game at all?
No, I have played the game extensively.
Oh, boy.
He is just an ass, basically, is the problem. The game basically just went tweak and ranked up the difficulty on you. Now, the problem is the bosses in this game level up with you, which means you can't just level past them, because they will have no part of this and say, no, we're not going to let you do that.
I hate that.
And that is what he's been doing. And when I hit level 99, he will be level 99 too, and there is no getting around that.
Man.
At the moment, I think that I just don't have a strategy that effectively deals with the fact that he is an offensive juggernaut.
Yeah.
It's kind of, in the game, this game, there's generally, you kind of have to reach homeostasis with the boss in the first few rounds. And then you just sort of deal with what he does to you and continue to inflict damage, and eventually you knock him out. And most bosses, the real struggle is trying to establish that balance that you get where he's doing damage to you, but you're recovering it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the strategy with him, finding that way to reach that happy center.
Yeah.
Because you're never just going to down a boss without worrying about your health. That just doesn't happen.
That happens quite a bit in Dragon Quest as well.
Well, the problem here is that I can't find that happy medium.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a bunch of forms. In his first few forms, I dump truck him. And you just burn through him, and he just goes down. And then you get to this guy, and he proceeds to do to you what you have done to the last few times he's shown up.
Do you have a mute spell?
I do, but I don't get to use it.
Why not?
First off, he's attacking with physical attacks, so it doesn't really matter.
Oh, okay.
But there's paralyzed spells, and they don't always work, and his resistance to it's very high. But he also tends to kill whoever I have queued up for my, this is going to work this time. And he goes, boom, no, it's not, you're dead.
So you just have to, stir the pot without thinking of the word hippopotamus.
What?
It's an old formula for alchemizing gold, is that you have to, you have to stir a molten lead without thinking of a certain word.
Oh.
Anyway.
But it's just kind of like this, I'm sure there's something really stupid that, I mean, with, I think there's 26 hats. I mean, I'm sure there's just something I'm missing about one of them that will be my key to get through. But the problem is that there's so many to experiment with, and you really don't know what you get into until you invest time into one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've run out of time to invest into them. I mean, certainly I could go wander around and experiment with them, but then I run the risk of him being a level 99 boss.
Yeah.
And I want no part of that.
So the reason I asked about Mute is that my memory of the very first Final Fantasy is, you know, Garland, the guy, he's the first boss and the last boss. And
Mm-hmm.
When you defeat his final form, he turns into Chaos, and that's the real last boss of Final Fantasy.
Which just happens to share the name here, yes.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
So maybe my question is valid, but one of the really annoying things Chaos would do is use Cure 4 on himself, which heals him like 9999. Like, it heals him to the max wherever he is.
Yes.
And you don't want the final boss using a spell like that. And so I got really frustrated, and I'm finally like, I'm going to try to mute him. And it's a spell that you wouldn't think would work on a boss, but for some reason, it can actually work. And there's a certain probability, but it could actually do that. And then he becomes a lot more manageable. So I thought maybe there was some trick strategy like that.
Regularly throughout the game, I inflicted status effects on enemies. A lot of times weapons have a status effect attached to them. Mm-hmm. So there was a boss that is just a bastard. And he has attacks that are just dick moves. I mean, that's the only way you can describe them. And they're basically like the game trolls you with his attacks. He's like, I'm going to take out all your healers. Bang. Bang. Okay, now win. Oh, you can't win now, can you? And I just happened to get lucky and paralyzed him on the first turn. Hmm. And he basically never got to move. And then Carly, who's also playing, got to this guy, and he just wrecked her because she never got the paralyze off.
Well, Final Fantasy as a series has a history of doing these sort of trick boss battles. Do you remember in Final Fantasy IV when you fight Asura, and she heals herself constantly? She deals a lot of damage to you, but she just heals herself like crazy. And the way to deal with her is to cast Reflect on her so that all her healing spells on herself reflect off and end up healing you instead.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the best approach is for this guy, because one of the skills we have, which is Mirror, which it boosts like defense and magic defense, yeah, it reflects all your healing spells back at him, which Ooh. Is particularly helpful. So you can't heal yourself once you use it, but he can still pound you into the dirt with his hands, which is his favorite strategy at the moment. But I'll get him somehow. But when I do, I might snap the XL in half just out of celebration.
All right. So what else you got?
So in my particular moment of juvenile level wish fulfillment, we had level 5 days. What do they call it? Level 5
vision.
Vision. Yes. Which is stupid.
Level 5 vision is what you get once you donate enough money to Xenu, right?
I think that's level 5 Thetan removal.
Oh.
But what they provided to society at their vision event could best be described as a vision of sorts. Because amongst the game, they talked about Mask of Miracle, which is the 3DS Layton game, that will have a downloadable puzzle every day for a year.
Whoa!
Which is a lot of damn puzzles.
It's about 360-something, I think.
Yes, 65 or 66, depending on the year it comes out, yes. But that's a lot. I mean, that's more puzzles than are in all Layton games.
Right.
I mean, they have like 120 puzzles, 160 puzzles, somewhere in that range. This is 360 puzzles.
In 3D.
In 3D, yes. Depending on how much you've slid the depth of your 3D.
3D matchsticks. It's important.
Oh.
It's important. Okay.
They also showed
Time Travelers. They showed
Time Travelers, which is just whacked.
Ni No Kuni for DS, not for PS3.
Yes, your DS game that you have to carry a book around with you to play it.
Mm-hmm. Portable.
It's kind of like playing it on an XL.
Have you seen the book? It's huge.
Yeah, it's like 300 pages or something. It's massive.
It's huge.
It is a tome. It's a magical tome.
It's like, how are you supposed to play this?
I hope it has a face inside like the one from the Care Bears movie.
What?
I'm pretty sure I saw that, but fucked if I can remember anything about it.
It's ridiculous. It's so stupid. They have Fantasy Life, which is the Brownie Brown RPG, yep. which actually looks kind of cool and has a really good staff on it. And then they went and did what would be my juvenile wish fulfillment, which is they said, what two game series for the DS does James Jones like more than any other? And they said, well, he owns every Phoenix Wright or Ace Attorney game ever made and played them all to completion at least once, in most cases 2 to 3 times. And he beats Layton games in 2 days. What if we put those two games together? And that's what they did. And they created this game, Layton versus Gakuten, which would be the Japanese name for the Ace Attorney series. And it has a trailer, and it is awesome.
It is.
Lots of pointing.
There's a lot of pointing.
There are going to be fingers coming out at your face from that 3DS like you've
never
believed.
Oh my god, I didn't think about it. Oh. So at this point, between Capcom and Level 5, Capcom a couple weeks ago giving us Mega Man Legends 3 and Level 5, Nintendo can basically charge whatever they want for a 3DS. And
which they
they've
are.
Already sold effectively.
Well, yeah, I haven't seen it yet for the US.
They could be like, $10,000, and I'd be like, fuck you. Take my money. Just take it.
What do you think Leighton versus Phoenix Wright plays like? Is it just segmented? Do you just play a chapter of Leighton and a chapter of Phoenix Wright?
It looks like it's going to be not quite hard segments, but like, I mean, all we have to go on are comments from producers. Mm. And it looks like it might not be the hard chapters, but yeah, it's basically going to be game elements of both games. Now, the trailer, which is, like I said, awesome. And you need to go watch it if you haven't, because it is awesome.
This is a lot of great animation.
Yeah, there is. And a side note being, this is the first time that the Phoenix Wright characters will be animated and fully voiced. It's just never happened before.
Yeah, I mean, they usually have like 2 or 3 frames of animation.
Yeah, and they have like 7 phrases that they play. Most of them are him exclaiming things while pointing.
Right.
But they basically use the phrase like, this time the puzzles will have contradictions or something like that at the end of the trailer.
I've had contradictions to a lot of Professor Layton puzzles.
It's like you...
Objection. This puzzle's bullshit.
Like, that phrase is personally terrifying. Like, what does that even mean?
You know what would be great is if you get a Professor Layton puzzle and you're like, this is horse shit. I hate this. And you go, objection! And then the game says, that is the correct answer. It's like it's unsolvable. If you're like, I object to you trying to get me to answer this stupid-ass riddle. And it's like, that's the correct answer.
Well, maybe, like, if there is some sort of, like, courtroom jousting, it's like, Leighton has the actual logical argument that is definitely right, and you just have to be, like, brilliant at sophistry and bullshit to convince the jury that the right answer is wrong, and that's the game, like, just being a terrible person.
Just being a douche to Leighton? I mean, yeah. The amazing part about the trailer is how it starts, because it's got Leighton basically being a courtroom prosecutor accusing this woman of witchcraft.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, as we've discussed in the past, the professor's area of expertise is archaeology. So I'm not sure what qualifies him for this particular assignment, but be that as it may. And then you basically see the Phoenix Wright slapping the paper before he objects thing, and then stepping out of the shadows to object.
Yeah.
At which point, it's like fanboy heads exploded throughout the world.
I mean, knowing how the Phoenix Wright games are set up, you know there's going to be a case where Leighton is on trial. Or maybe maybe Luke is on trial.
Luke.
Whoa, maybe Leighton is on trial for something with Luke.
No. Oh, it's gonna be interesting, to say the least. I don't even know what they're gonna do with this game, and I'm already thrilled. I mean, they basically could not have come up with a game that's more self-serving for me.
It's a game made especially for you, James.
It might be.
All right. Well, Greg, what did you have this week?
First of all, I finished Castlevania Chronicles.
You finished Castlevania Chronicles?
You've always got to have more than one Castlevania on the go, Johnny. You can't leave it to chance and just have one Castlevania game that you play.
I can't play just one Pokemon at a time, because I get bored.
I have to catch them all, goddammit.
At once.
Yeah.
No, I'll probably talk more about the end of Lords of Shadow next week. I'll pass on that for now. But first of all, I wanted to pay my respects at the passing of a dear friend. Last week was the final, so we're told, episode of the Retronauts podcast at oneup.com.
Yeah.
Episode 99, a slightly curious place to finish, but I assume they'll probably do episodes at conventions and things in the future.
They didn't have enough bits for 3 digits. It's a kill screen.
That must be it. Can only get up to 99 lives or whatever. But yeah, it's over. It's done. And yeah, I just wanted to say that it was a wonderful, great podcast. It was my second podcast, literally. It was the second one I ever listened to. I kind of got there circuitously through RFN. It would sort of get mentioned. I think it was more that one of yours would get mentioned, and I went over to that, and then I saw Retronauts and thought, oh, this is the one for me. And so I've heard every episode at this point, and it's a really, really great show. I mean, the subject matter close to my heart, and of course has the advantage of being not at all topical apart from the occasional retro news bit, I suppose. But it's still kind of funny to go back and listen to when there were like lots of virtual console games coming out and stuff.
They still complained about them.
Yeah, they did. It's funny to hear them complain about that stuff now.
Well, I listened to it a few days ago as well, and I've heard every Retronauts, been to their panel at PAX, and it was sad. It was definitely sad hearing it go. I mean, it's too bad that it seems like the main reason is Jeremy just doesn't like doing it, and I guess that was always kind of an issue, is that I always felt like Retronauts was entertaining in spite of itself, because it always felt like they didn't really want to do it, and they constantly talked about how shitty it is. But just the content is timeless, as you said, and it's really educational. For me, it was a way to learn about games that I'd never played before, I might never get to play. I mean, they did a whole episode about Falcom. You know, most of those games haven't even come to America. And it's so obscure, but it's interesting to hear people who are really, really into these niche areas of the gaming world. It's really interesting to hear them go crazy over something like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at first, you know, I was excited to hear, like, I think one of the early episodes is about the 20th anniversaries of Zelda and Castlevania, or, you know, stuff like that. But eventually you end up listening to stuff about Diablo or Tomb Raider or, you know, adventure games. I mean, really, that was a whole section of gaming I was pretty much unfamiliar with that was a great way to listen. So I do have a few of my favorite episodes that I'd like to go through for people who haven't listened to Retronauts. These might be funny places to pick up with it. Just as I said, they're completely timeless. You can enjoy them at any time, and they're very re-listenable, in fact, if you're struggling for something to listen to. So the first one I've got is episode 29. It's a survival horror one. This is during what I call the Sharky Interregnum. That was another time where Jeremy didn't want to do it, and so he just didn't. And so Sharky did it. And those are some of my favourite episodes, actually, especially the survival horror one is classic. And in a way, funnily enough, they actually fucked up recording that, and so they recorded the beginning at the end. I can't imagine doing such a thing.
No, we would never do that.
But yeah, great, great episode. Shane is priceless on that one. He's got this crazy list of survival horror games. He references, I think it's called Ill Bleed. Apparently they promoted it in Japan with the tagline, "You will shit with fear."
Do they talk about D2?
Yeah, they do talk about D2. They talk about
Jessica. You're making
Jessica.
Me want to go listen to it again.
It is absolutely amazing episode. Absolutely love
Blue
that
Stinger,
one.
Is that in there?
Blue Stinger's in it. Shane's list is all-encompassing. Yeah. It's exhaustive. Every silly thing in it, absolutely terrific episode. Somewhat less exotic, but no less entertaining, is number 31, which is the 8-bit Mario episode to coincide with Galaxy coming out. So, you know, most of our listeners will be able to relate to a lot of the stories there. It's just a lot of fun covering familiar ground. The number 47 is the Bionic Commando one, which I hadn't even played Bionic Commando Rearmed at the time. But that was kind of, you know, what it was coinciding with, because I didn't have my PS3 yet. But they talk about Bionic Commando, and there's a really funny part where Jeremy reads this kind of, like, novelization, like a satirical, like, novelization style thing that he wrote of Bionic Commando, like about the lift killing someone, and it's completely bizarre, very, very funny. Obviously, really, really interesting classic game that's just perfect sort of wheelhouse stuff for Retronauts. And finally, I've got 59, which is the Radical Dreamers Chrono Cross episode, which is definitely a really interesting way to learn about those games if you've never played them, which I haven't. But if you're a fan of Chrono Trigger, but you want to find out about how those games relate to Chrono Trigger and kind of fit together.
Take acid, that's how you do it.
Well, you could do that. that.
It's complicated, for sure.
That's also one of the last episodes that Shane was on before the quickening or whatever that went on at One Up There, where it all went wrong. And to be fair, as much as I love the show, and it's sad to see it go now because they've still put out good episodes, it did miss up that what Shane was gone.
Yeah.
He was always there with these crazy lists and the obscure sort of minutiae that he had to bring to the table and his secret best games in whatever genre.
And you know, our friend Chris Kohler started to show up more sporadically towards the end as well, I felt like.
Yeah, Chris is a pretty indispensable part of that show.
Yeah, when Chris isn't on the show, it's hard to listen to it.
In the golden age, Chris is there pretty much all the time, to like the 2007, 2008 kind of period. But to everyone that was a regular on that show, Jeremy Parrish, Scott Sharkey, Jem Frank, Chris Kohler, and Shane Bettenhouse, and thanks. You know, that was a really great show. It helped get me through some difficult times in my life, even. It's a wonderful show. I will miss it greatly.
Yeah, me too.
And so with that, we move on to happier matters. I've been playing Drill Dozer for the GBA. This is my first time picking up this game. I had my eye on it for quite a while. It got really good reception. I remember Carl, back when he reviewed games for us, gave it a 9.
It's hard to believe Carl reviewed games.
Yeah, I know. Well,
seems like ages.
That was the last time Nintendo let Game Freak out of the Pokemon kitchen.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, that's right. So, I mean, it's quite a weird one. That was about, what, 10 years after they first began making Pokemon games that came out, which was sort of 5 years ago now. So I think in another 5 years, perhaps,
They did the first ones in 96, but they did Game Boy Camera in 98.
Well, okay, fair enough.
But then it was Pokemon straight down the Drill Dozer, and ever since.
Yeah.
The only other thing, of course, I've played outside of Pokemon of Game Freaks is Pulse Man, which we've mentioned quite a few times back when I first got it for the Japan Virtual Console, and then when it was an import title, which was fun.
I think Drill Dozer is much better than Pulse Man.
I do too, actually. I do. I mean, pacing wise, it's probably a bit slower than I would kind of, you know, like quick sort of twitchy games like Pulse Man are generally more my kind of thing, but I still like Drill Dozer a bit better.
Don't you think it feels a bit like a Wario Land game?
It does a bit, because you are this little girl, Jill, in this like big mech, so you're kind of like a heavy character. You know, the way you jump and all that isn't very graceful.
It's kind of like Explosion Aid in that way.
So the gameplay is quite unusual. I mean, it's in some ways, I suppose, it's almost got shades of a bit of something like a Bionic Commando, from the point of view that some of the gameplay is traversing things in a way which you might normally be kind of standard fare, but in a very different way, because it's all about drilling stuff. Especially where you've got the segments where you're kind of using the like reverse function on the drill to jump from gap to gap and stuff.
Yeah.
That really did kind of remind me of a Bionic Commando style of gameplay. And I like that. I like taking something that would seem kind of simple in a different gameplay setting. And you know, maybe once you wrap your head around the way the game mechanics work here, it's still not difficult. But it's that process of kind of relearning the language before you really get into it. And then you could become so much more adept at doing it after that. So that scratched an itch that I really like. And it's a weird sort of structure for a portable game, because I think the main levels are actually quite long. Each one you go through, it's not like a strictly linear left to right kind of situation. You are coming back at certain points of branching paths and stuff, but there is generally kind of a right way to go through the level. In particular, you always need to collect these extra gears in each level for your dozer until you reach, like, once you've got all three gears, that's the point at which you can kind of just drill indefinitely. Otherwise, you're kind of managing this meter, which comes up with a very obtrusive overlay on the screen, which really, I don't see why that was necessary, because it is a bit of a problem at times with obscuring what you actually want to see, especially when you've got the timing down and everything. You really feel like you don't need it, or at least you don't need to see it quite on that scale. But you know, every time you're kind of guided to find the three gears which let you access more of the level and then, you know, ultimately get to the end. But it isn't quite that simple, because when you finish the game, you're able to buy an extra hard like drill bit for your dozer, and that allows you to access different parts of the levels that you weren't able to go before, mm-hmm. and collect treasures. And then you can also use the in-game currency, which you'll definitely find more of in these sort of secret areas that you'll open up with the advanced capabilities of the dozer, to buy extra levels. And these extra levels are quite a lot shorter, and they tend to rely on specific elements of the gameplay. So think Boy and His Blob challenge levels, if you've played that.
Or the Wario Land Shake It secret levels were very much like that.
I mean, the secret levels are more comparable in length to their counterparts than they are here. That's the thing. With the Boy and His Blob levels, they're really quite short, and they have to be because they have no checkpoints, mm-hmm. whereas the main levels in a Boy and His Blob have plenty of checkpoints. It's really quite forgiving in that way. So these are shorter, but significantly harder, and they take certain gameplay ideas that are in the main levels to their conclusion, if you will, as some quite advanced segments. So it is quite an easy game, not the longest game to start with, but some of these extra things I've really quite enjoyed playing. So if you haven't tracked it down yet for whatever reason, it was a bit lost in that late GBA phase where the DS had reached its crescendo at that point, in the sort of end of 2005, beginning of 2006. So you may have overlooked it. I would certainly recommend, if you can find a good condition copy the way I did, you get the Rumble Pack that way, mm-hmm. Or even you can plug it into your Game Boy Player and it'll do the Rumble functionality through your GameCube controller. But certainly, if there are one day GBA games on the 3DS, this would be a really cool one to find.
Yeah, I think what I remember the most about Drill Dozer is the sort of high-pitched whine of the drills going. I could do without that.
It's omnipresent.
Yeah, because you're always drilling. So that got on my nerves. And then also the fact that you primarily play the game with shoulder buttons kind of got old after a while. And it might have been the system I was playing it on, which was probably an original DS. Maybe I just got annoyed with the buttons on that particular hardware. But I just remember after a while feeling like, man, it does ergonomically just not a very comfortable game to play after a while. But you know, that could depend greatly on the system that you use.
Well, I mean, even with the long levels, you can pretty much just save anywhere and it'll start you right there. Mm. The levels are kind of long, but it's still very much built for portability. Mm-hmm. I mean, my only real sort of qualms with it is there was just a few areas where the flow of the gameplay was not quite right. Certainly there's like a water segment, and there's a segment in the air, and there's some segments where you're sort of drilling through these little tunnels all the time, which you've felt a bit slow, get a bit bogged down, you know, just your basic kind of traversal is a bit slow. And then there was other times where, as you said, because you are drilling all the time, it felt like perhaps, you know, that process of shifting through the gears or just, you know, getting through certain bits of the scenery could happen a bit quicker, mm-hmm. just to make it flow better. But that would really be my only issue with the game, and it's certainly not a major one.
All right, well, moving from one 2D platformer to another, I've been playing some Kirby's Epic Yarn, which just came out this past week, and I've made it through the first two worlds out of about five or six, it looks like, and I think there might be a secret world or maybe some secret levels at the end, but I do really like it so far. I was a little concerned about, you know, whether the game would have the depth, the complexity to satisfy me the way that Wario Land Shake It did. And basically, just based on the early reviews, everything was so positive. I was like, I'll just go for it.
I did too. As I said before, with the Excitebot situation, I am prepped now for this, and the copy is in the mail. I hope to be speaking about it soon, because the reception is kind of overwhelming. Yeah. I do wonder whether perhaps in the future it will be trendy for people to say, oh, actually, Wario is better.
I think Wario Land, I mean, Wario Land is more made for guys like us, you know, more experienced players, somebody looking for something a little more sophisticated, for sure. But I'll tell you something, Kirby is motherfucking delightful. And that's why, it's getting all these reviews. I mean, it may not be 100% satisfying in this respect or that. It may not be a challenging game. It may not deliver the sort of tension that I like sometimes in my 2D action games. But it's so overwhelmingly charming, and and you can't deny that. And the thing that has surprised me, I mean, obviously the graphics are spectacular, and they do really hold up in the final game. Every level seems to offer some graphical element that you haven't quite seen before. And every now and then, it's weird because after a while, you get kind of used to the presentation. And you maybe don't notice it as much. And then you'll see something in the world that you haven't seen before. And you look at it and you realize it's made out of felt. And all of a sudden, it makes you just kind of step back a little bit and appreciate the entire aesthetic all over again. It's pretty amazing looking. It honestly is. I think it's easily one of the best looking Wii games, but in a way that no other Wii game has even attempted. But what has surprised me is the soundtrack is also so good.
That was really good in Wario Land, I thought.
I had forgotten how much I liked the music in Wario Land. But, you know, now that I'm going through this and I'm hearing the level, and the music really stands out. It's not in the background. There's a lot of jazz, which there was in Wario Land as well. But it just sounds so good. It doesn't sound like video game music. A lot of it just sounds like good music. And it's really catchy, and, you know, you can collect the CDs. I can't wait for TYP to use this on Radio Trivia.
Yeah, I think that's a given.
It's absolutely a given.
From what I've heard, it's like a lot of jazz piano and stuff,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very beautiful, but it doesn't sound like something from a kid's game. It's actually probably the most adult part of the game is the soundtrack, because it's music that a kid probably wouldn't listen to. But it fits. I mean, it's very classy, and the music is really, really good. That's been a nice surprise. It's just something that I should have anticipated, but I didn't, and it just really caught me off guard. And I don't want to talk too much about the gameplay because we have a letter coming up in listener mail that will give me a chance to come back to it, but it's definitely very fun. I would say the only disappointment so far is that, you know, obviously the game's very easy. It's made so you can't die, you can't really fail, and the enemies don't pose too much of a threat in most cases, but sometimes traversing the level requires a little bit of thought. Sometimes there are auto-scrolling levels where you can easily miss something if you're not careful. And Wario Land had some stuff like that too, some of the underwater stages, for instance.
So if you stop moving, like you just stop on an auto-scrolling level, does it just push you?
Good question. That hasn't happened to me. And they do tend to scroll pretty slowly, so it's very forgiving. Oh. But, you know, you might have to go through a stage twice to get everything if you're just not paying attention. But the disappointing thing for me is that I was really looking forward to collecting the sort of secret items, you know, the collectible stuff as a way to provide some optional challenge. And that was a huge thing in Wario Land Shaken. I mean, it's not that hard to beat Wario Land, but to get all of the treasures is really difficult and will take you a long time and a lot of skill. And I was kind of hoping Kirby would be the same way, where the main game would be even easier than Wario Land, but they'd still have those secret items as, you know, something where you're really going to have to think about, how do I get up there, or where was that thing, you know? And unfortunately, so far, and, you know, I'm still fairly early, but through two worlds, I haven't had to go back a single time to get one of those items. I haven't even really had to go out of my way to get them. I mean, they're not on the main path. But if you're playing the game fairly thoroughly, I mean, if you have experience with 2D platformers, if you can beat New Super Mario Bros. Wii by yourself, you're not going to have any trouble getting these items. They're really not going to challenge you at all. That's kind of a disappointment. You know, I thought I'd have to work a little bit harder to get that stuff. So that's too bad. It makes me think this game is going to be over sooner than it might have been otherwise.
Maybe alcohol will make you slow it down a little bit. Just a thought.
I haven't played any of the two-player, but it would definitely be a lot of fun. If I had a little niece or nephew or a girlfriend or really anybody, I think, you know, it's the kind of game when you see it, you'll want to play it.
A mannequin, a German Shepherd, smart one, though.
Yeah, I don't know if your dog could play it, but...
No beagles. Beagles will not be able to play.
Pretty much anyone else could. Maybe a poodle could probably pull it off. They're smart. No, I mean, the game's not insultingly easy, but it's very easy. And I think, you know, if you're an adult gamer, if you're really experienced gamer and you're used to being challenged a lot more, you just have to go in with the mindset that you're playing it not to be challenged, not to really be pushed, but just to enjoy the experience. Yeah. Just to have it like wash over you, just to kind of bask in the glow of Kirby. And that's kind of what it feels like sometimes. And I'm cool with that.
I mean, I'm looking forward to that part of it. To be honest, obviously, I like hard games, but not every game has to be that way.
Right.
And very much so when you consider that, you know, DKC Returns is around the corner, and, you know, from the indications we've got, that probably will fulfill that element of my appetite.
It'll at least be more difficult.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I think
easily.
I think it'd probably be more difficult than New Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's what I'm hoping it will be. Anyway.
Yeah. Me too. Mario was a bit of a letdown for me, actually.
It seemed like most of the trouble we had playing DKCR was self-defeating. We did things to screw ourselves up versus the game.
A little bit, but then you look at that minecart level.
Yeah, that thing was
a bitch. You know,
that was tricky. And so I'm encouraged by that.
Yeah.
And I think if you just look at the kind of niche for it to fill, you know, we've had New Super Mario Brothers, we've got Kirby on the other side of that now. I just feel like it does kind of fit the best into, you know, something that's going to demand a little more. And you know, you've still got co-op, and it is going to be a mainstream release. It's not going to be a treasure game or anything. But
it's not going to be Metroid Prime 3, for that matter, or especially 2.
Yeah.
Which is extremely hardcore. But, I mean, honestly, right now, it's a good time to have Kirby. It's a game I can veg out on a little bit, and it's nice to be able to flip over to that when Super Meat Boy has pummeled me into the ground.
Transition!
Yeah. No, it's funny because they're, you know, I got these two new platformers on the same day, and they could not be more different. I mean, they really couldn't be any more different. Super Meat Boy, it just came out on Xbox Live Arcade. It's on sale, actually, for the first few weeks. It's only $10 instead of $15, which will be the permanent price. And it's an excellent value. It's a really great game. I'm enjoying it a hell of a lot so far. And it will be coming to WiiWare at some point. I think they've talked about it might not have as many levels because of the file size cap. But it is coming to WiiWare eventually, and if that's the only way you can play it right now, I'm saying look forward to it, because if you remember the days of 8-bit platformers, I mean, if you've ever played a really difficult 2D platformer and enjoyed it, this is perfect for you. It's full of all kinds of nostalgia, but it also just has all these really sick level designs that are unlike anything I've ever played. I mean, it's probably the hardest platformer I've ever played. And it has so many ways to punish you and challenge you. It really makes the, like in Bionic Commando Rearmed, you know, those challenge levels. Oh, it makes those look easy. It really does. And it has you do some just ridiculous stuff, like wall jumping around ledges to get up higher, you know, buzzsaws are chasing you. It's ridiculous. Super Meat Boy is really pretty fantastic. And it is a game that will raise your blood pressure. It will make your thumb sore. It will make you cuss a lot. I mean, I've owned the game for almost exactly 2 days. I've died over 500 times. It keeps stats for you on your deaths. And it's this pretty spectacularly brutal game. It's also extremely satisfying when you get to the end of the level. And it has so much optional stuff. I mean, it has these warp zones that are hidden in certain levels that open up a series of 3 extra levels that are done in some kind of like old retro style. Some of them look like Game Boy games, some of them look like Atari games, some of them look like Super Nintendo games, and they're done with these amazing intro sequences of, you know, it looks just like a game from that time. It's really impressive. The music changes. The music is awesome, by the way, all the way through. Spectacular soundtrack. And, you know, the game just, it controls really well, which it absolutely has to. I mean, that's totally mandatory in a game like this, and it's really rock solid. And even, I mean, I'm using an Xbox D-pad, which is not ideal, but I do have the black slim model, which I think they improved the D-pad slightly. So, it's probably not as bad as if I had like an original model.
You can't use your Rock Band portable drum kit thing?
I could, probably, yeah. I just haven't needed to.
Right.
I mean, the good thing about it is that the game's more about timing than it is finessing the D-pad. So a lot of times you're just kind of going right, but you have to jump at exactly the right nanosecond. So moving back and forth on the D-pad is not that important. Also, up and down don't do anything. And I think that circumvents the biggest problem with the Xbox 360 D-pad, which is that it interprets diagonals when it shouldn't a lot of times.
Right, yeah.
And in this case, it's just irrelevant. So they kind of got around that. But it's pretty awesome. It's certainly a game that is not for everyone. In fact, it's probably not for most people.
It's not for anyone, actually.
It's for me. Oh, it's for me. It definitely is. It is extremely well made. If you like a really sadistic but really rewarding and clever and actually sort of brutally genius 2D platformer, it's perfect. It's the best you're ever going to find, and there's a hell of a lot to it as well. So the last game I'll talk about, going back to the easy side of things, is actually Endless Ocean Blue World. I finally caught up with this. I remember James talking about it a while back, and it was on my Gamefly queue, and it came up, and I was like, eh. You know, I wasn't all that eager to get into it, but when I finally did, after about the first hour, it started to really draw me in, and I ended up enjoying the experience a lot more than I expected to. In fact, I actually kind of considered keeping it, but I ended up beating it pretty quickly. I mean, I finished the story, and then the optional stuff, there seems to be a lot of it in the post game, and I just kind of felt like I'd had enough. It felt like it would be too much of a slog, you know? But it is a great game. The underwater visuals are really surprisingly good.
Did you feel like the game works really well underwater and is a complete broken mess above water?
Yeah, but you don't really play the game above water, so it doesn't matter. No, but you're mostly doing menus up above water.
It's just amazing how poorly movement handles above water.
Yeah, but that's less than 1% of the game.
I know, I just thought that was really amusing.
It is weird. It's a weird disconnect. But yeah, when you're underwater, which is the entire game virtually, it feels good and it looks amazing. And I think what surprised me about the game and what ended up being what I enjoyed the most about it is the sense of exploration, the sense of discovery. And, you know, I figured you get down in the water and it's just kind of this big 3D space and you're swimming through and here's a fish here and there's a fish there. And I think they're very smart about the design of the areas that you go to, and that there's a lot of variety from one area to the next, but there's also a lot of variety within each one of those areas. And there's really no two places that look exactly alike within those, that's hard to do from an art design perspective.
Well, and you'd get lost if they did that.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's a very good map system.
There is.
And you can actually pull up the map while you swim around, which is nice sometimes if you're trying to chart it out.
If you're trying to remember, where was that place I was? Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, hell, I don't remember now.
Right, that would be tough. And I think the game largely avoids that problem just due to great art. And the nice thing about it is most of the areas that you go to are sort of focused on some kind of surface, you know, either like the seafloor, or there's a lot of rocks there, or it's just a big cliffside and you kind of have to swim down the cliff and then find some stuff at the bottom of the ocean down there at the bottom. So it's not like a big open space. There's a lot of structure, and you're always near some kind of physical structure that it makes it less disorienting, but it also gives them places to put things for you to find, you know? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't feel like you're just sort of aimlessly swimming through this vast ocean. It really almost never feels like that. And I think that's a very, very clever design decision, and it makes the game just a lot more approachable. The pace of the game is definitely slow.
Yes.
And at first, it's a little unsettling, actually. I mean, it's just rare that you play a video game that is that deliberately slow. And after a while, I actually kind of like that. I mean, I got used to it, and I started to appreciate that. It's kind of like staring at a tropical fish aquarium. It almost feels like you can feel your blood pressure drop as you play.
Vitality sensor.
No!
Honestly, that really did come to mind as I was playing it. I thought this would be great with a vitality sensor, because they could set it so that your oxygen rate goes up, which actually happens, and so it would be an incentive for you to remain calm while you play the game.
Or to just not wear it.
Well, depends. And also the game doesn't need the nunchuck, so makes sense, you know, you could plug it in the bottom of the remote. But it's really good. I mean, it's a pointer-based game, which helps a lot. There's almost no motion control. You have to waggle every now and then to dodge an animal,
shark.
But that's very rare and very easy. The game's really interesting. I enjoyed the story quite a bit. Some of the writing is very unfortunate, the dialogue writing. There's a character named Gigi that is
the worst character in the history of gaming.
Like, really, really kind of borderline racist.
Even if you ignore that, he's just a bad character.
Yeah, he's just annoying in general. And some of the dialogue is just really bad. I think actually very near the intro, there's actually a That's What She Said joke.
Perfect.
In the script. Hard to believe, but if it wasn't that, it was something else. It was something like really crude and pop culture, and I was like, that doesn't belong here at all.
And it wasn't being used ironically either.
No. No, it wasn't.
It was the first serious application of a "that's what she said" I have seen in my life.
It's really pretty bad writing. But the story itself is actually pretty interesting. It's a big mystery, you know, and it unravels as you go, and I enjoy getting to the end of it. I enjoyed seeing where it all came to, you know. And it gives you a lot of moments that are memorable. I mean, there's times where you're swimming into underwater temples and the characters are freaked out, and you feel a little freaked out because you don't know what's in there and it's dark. And you know that you don't really have anything to fear because the game's easy and it's not, you know, it's not that aggressive towards the player, but you're not really sure what you're getting into, and it's a nice feeling. And then there's also a moment, and it's actually teased at the very beginning, but it really ends up being sort of the climax, where you go into the final location to explore, and this just massive horde of whales shows up.
Oh, yeah.
And you're swimming through, and there's like, at any given time, there's like 20 whales on the screen, and the frame rate doesn't slow down or anything, and it's really kind of awe-inspiring. I mean, I was surprised at how impactful it was when I actually was swimming through there. They're very graceful, they're animated really beautifully, you know, and you're just going through that, and there's all these different species, and I know it's kind of a contrived plot point that, you know, all these whales like mystically show up right when you're about to go into the big finale, but it feels really special. I mean, it's really cool. It's a very, very cool moment.
I do have to say that you probably won't get to try this out, but the online mode actually works pretty well, except for the communication system, which is just busted.
Well, it has WeSpeak.
Yeah, if you don't have WeSpeak on the other end, it doesn't do you any good.
Do you just have to use the light pen or what?
Well, you can use the light pen, but there are these pre-written phrases. Mm. But you can delete part of the phrases. So, like, you can try to combine bits of them to say really bizarre things. So when I played it with Carly, she was in the back corner just doing, hey, 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 over and over again for no reason that I could discern. Meanwhile, I was trying to cut up words in such a way as to say things that would make Nintendo angry. But the actual game itself works pretty well, except for the fact it's hard to get pictures of people because they're constantly moving. Hmm. It's kind of neat. They have a special area set aside called the Garden, which is where you get to do the multiplayer stuff. And you can make a lot of money tandem diving.
You can't do it in any of the normal areas?
I think you might be able to, but the Garden is kind of like the default multiplayer area. And it's like this like super diverse bio mass just at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, but it would be a shame if you can't go swim around the icebergs and, you know, play with the penguins and go to the tropical estuary or whatever. There's a lot of really surprisingly interesting marine habitats represented in the game. They're very diverse.
Yes. And you get to shoot whales with sharks.
Pulsar gun. Yeah.
Yes. Which also heals things and hurts them. So it's magic.
It calms them down.
It calms them down with electric shock.
No, it's a great game. If you haven't checked it out yet and you're not sure that you would like it, my recommendation is go for it. Because it's really well done, and you might be surprised at how much you enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit goofy, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. It survives its own goofiness, despite GG, which is an active attempt to be more goofy than it can hope to survive.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, somebody thought they were being really funny writing that script for GG, and they missed big time.
Do you think when Treehouse got that game and they came across the GG character, they went, oh my god, what do we do with this?
It ends up being funny in like a first season of The Office Michael Scott way.
Car crash comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh.
Their only hope was to completely rewrite the character. I mean, you could tell he's a douche just from how he looks, so.
Yeah, pretty much. His swirls cut into his hair and...
Yes, and his dive suit is completely covered in flames. Ooh. Not literal flames, but flames painted on the dive suit.
It's
head
bad.
To toe.
It's bad.
It's horrible.
Okay, anyway, that's Endless Ocean 2. Now we're going to take a break. When we come back, our special guest arrives.
We'll be right back.
So we are here, and we finally have our special guest in the house, and it's Nathan Fouts from Mommy's Best Games. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, guys.
We're very happy to have you. And not only are you the developer at Mommy's Best Games, but you also run a very cool website called 8-Bit Horse. And we'll talk about that in a little bit, too.
Awesome.
Of course, we met Nathan back at PAX. I think I might have even met you before that. I can't remember. But we got to play Grapple Buggy back at PAX East, and that was momentous for the podcast for reasons I won't go into right now. And
a disaster later, but yes.
Yes. Nothing to do with the game itself. Anyway, I'm personally also a fan of all three of your games over on Xbox 360 that are already out. And so we wanted to give you a chance to pimp those a little bit and just generally talk to you about 2D gaming, 8-bit arcade gaming, maybe some of your early influences and how those might relate to Nintendo. But, you know, our listeners, I think, generally have a pretty strong interest in 2D platformers and 2D action games anyway, and that's part of the reason that we've talked about your games a number of times on the show, even though they're not Nintendo-related explicitly. So, Nathan, maybe we could start off by you just giving us like the really quick version of your career and how you ended up where you are now doing what you do now.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you to all the Nintendo fans who found it in their heart to buy any other system than a Nintendo system. I respect you for that, to allow another system in your home. Well, I started at a PC company, Running with Scissors. They do family entertainment, like Postal and Postal 2. And so we had fun there severing limbs and, you know, making people's guts spill out. But after that, I went to InSpace, and we worked on some failed projects there. That was enlightening.
You didn't work on Geist, did you?
You know, that was called, I think it was like Project Fear internally, which is funny because then a game called Fear came out. But I worked on never to be released ever, Duke Nukem D-Day, which was pretty cool. Yeah, that one got canceled, but I've got the disc somewhere for the PlayStation 2.
Send me one of those.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And of course, InSpace made Duke Nukem: A Time to Kill, didn't they? For the for the PlayStation 1.
Exactly, Duke Nukem D-Day was going to be a PlayStation 2 launch title.
Ah.
Way back then, so they made the PS1 games, and I showed up for a PS2 game. It's gonna be awesome. They were also working on an Austin Powers 3 game that didn't happen. And so then I switched over to Insomniac Games, and we ended up shipping a PS3 launch title called Resistance Fall of Man, which had some cool weapons in it, which is why I was there. I designed and programmed the weapons for them, and had a lot of fun with that. And then did the bosses in Ratchet and Clank Future, Tools of Destruction, which was the first... Sorry, that's how you're supposed to say it.
Very nice.
The ads went like that. I actually did the voiceover for the ads. A lot of people don't know that.
Oh, cool.
But, I got to go Ratchet and Clank Future, Tools of Destruction. So, anyway, so we did that, and then, at that point, I know I just spilled that out in like a couple of minutes, but that was actually 10 years of my life. So, so that was 10 years of 3D, all the while I've been pining and whining away to make a 2D game, but never got the chance to yet. Well, that's not true. It's just money elsewhere. You know, there just wasn't the opportunity to make a big game back then. And then basically XNA happened, and it kind of opened up the Xbox 360. And since I'm not really an engine guy, so to speak, I'm more of a gameplay design, you know, art guy, that was perfect because it gave everybody the low-level rendering, input, sound effects, music, everything like that. And then you can make your game on top of that. So that's when I formed Mommy's Best Games in 2007 with my wife, and we created Weapon of Choice. It came out in 2008, actually. It launched on Community Games on the Xbox 360.
It was the first thing I downloaded. First thing I bought, actually.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I played the trial, and I was like, oh, hell yes.
That's fantastic, man. Yeah, no, I mean, it was, you know, it was a blast to do and a blast to work on, and we wanted to get it on XBLA at the time, and Microsoft pushed us really hard to be on community games, because they didn't have much cool stuff. So,
right.
I mean, back then, it's like, basically, at launch, there was Weapon of Choice, and then Colosseum was very good. Carnival Showtime came out in December.
That's very good. I have that, too.
Exactly. And Biology Battle. And Actually, I think Biology Battle and Walk were the two launch titles that were not complete shite. And Word Soup, honestly. Word Soup was really good as a puzzle game. And then, so then Carnival came out in December, Biology Battle, Colosseum, and Blow. Blow came out, I think, in the spring. Mm-hmm. Those are good games. But yeah, they pushed us hard to get over to there.
Well, definitely I would say that, I'm not an expert on the indie game scene on Xbox. I know there are a lot of blogs and websites devoted to that, but I play the trials from now and then, the ones that look really interesting. And I still think Weapon of Choice is probably one of the best I've ever seen on there. It's definitely on a different tier than most of the indie games that get put up there. I mean, it's probably a little more ambitious in scope than either of the other two games that have followed up. But I think from what we saw of Grapple Buggy in the demo back at PAX East, it looks like that's going to be at least as big of a game as Weapon of Choice, at least as bombastic as that.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I mean, yeah, Weapon of Choice, we really tried to push out new design. Like one of my favorite all-time games is Contra Hardcore on the Genesis. So I love Contra 3. But it's just not as cool as Hardcore. I'm sorry, guys. So, you know, talk to the Konami team back then. But they were clearly on acid for our Hardcore. Like Contra 3, they were drinking their beers, right, and you know, doing chicks. But Hardcore, they were just on the ground laying in piles of cocaine. I don't know what the hell happened to Hardcore. Like, it's crazy. It's actually just an acid trip. I don't know.
We need this on Virtual Console.
We really do. I've never played it.
I was actually just playing Contra Rebirth.
Oh, yeah, sure.
The WiiWare one.
It's a horrible name, but the game is good. Rebirth is good. The problem is, I don't know, what do they do? Why do they, like, have to reference old games so much? Why don't they just freaking make a new Contra? You know what I mean? Or a new anything that's cool.
Right.
With the Arc System Works Hardcore game, I'm not sure if you've seen that. That's like,
there you go, Hardcore Uprising. Yeah, that looks good. I'm excited about that one, so maybe that one will be more original. But anyway, Rebirth is good. Contra Rebirth is good, but Hardcore still takes the cake on complete insanity, you know, for a Contra game. Mm-hmm. Except for maybe Neo Contra. I don't know if you guys have looked at that one. That one's super easy. A lot of people, you know, poo-poo it. But some of the extra endings are pretty insane. They're pretty amazing.
So clearly you have a Wii, and you've delved into WiiWare a little bit.
Yeah.
Is there anything else on WiiWare that has really caught your attention that you think might be in the same spirit of the games that you're making over on Xbox?
Well, it's kind of like, I don't know, weird, like standing on the shoulder of a giant thing. A lot of those games that are out on the Virtual Console are my hero games, and so to compare ours to theirs is really presumptuous. Mm-hmm. You know, we just aim to anybody that likes those style games to do them good games, you know, expecting that they've even played those older games. Like, I expect you to know everything, and so I try not to put anything into my game that you've already played. Mm-hmm. If I know about it, and I try to play a lot of games. With that said, Chouaniki's out on the Virtual Console.
Yes!
And if you like doing acid, you should check that game out.
I can't fucking believe that you just brought up Chouaniki.
Yes!
The history of that game with our show. Oh, I wish John was here. Man.
I love that game. I mean, it's just such a trip. And you know what's funny about it is
everything.
Well, you know, I know, but the development, the polish level in it is sort of half-assed.
Yeah.
And the controls are sort of, you know, it's not perfect, but it's just so intense and just got so much, you know, verve to it that you just like, I can't not love this. This is fantastic. You know, when Elvis Fish House Boss comes out, just throw the controller down. You know what I mean? Like, you can't beat that. That thing's so insane. You know, so I love that game. I go to that game for inspiration. I go to a lot of games for inspiration, honestly. You know, even lots of, you know, box titles on the Wii, like Excitebot's Trick Racing. I love the shit out of that game.
Awesome.
It's a great game. I like, you know, I like kind of, you know, arcadey Mountain Dew games. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you want to call them, but those are...
Have you played Super Meat Boy?
Actually, I got to help judge it last year in IGF, and cool. Yeah, I have. It's great. Yeah. It was a good game. I mean, my only complaint about it is, I'm not even going to talk. Like, the game's great. Like, I just wish the level art was prettier. That's all. I think the, you know, some of the other art's pretty. I just wish that was more pretty. That's all. It's got kind of like a too old look to it for me. But who am I to say? You know. I'm just being a dick. I mean, like, you know, I just tell them how it is. They don't have to, you know, nobody has to care. It's just like, I just wish it was prettier, you know? And then like our games are so, I don't know, polarizing in terms of the art, style. Mm-hmm. Like, some people say they love it and some people say they hate it. And so if, for me to say I don't like somebody else's art style is probably a compliment, honestly.
I'd say your artwork reminds me of like 80s heavy metal album covers.
That is a huge compliment. Like, as far as I'm concerned, because it's not like I think those are beautiful, but there's just something about them that kind of stirs your, you know, your chi or your chai tea. I don't know, whatever it stirs, but it just gets you excited. Like when you see those, when like, you know, the Iron Maiden covers and stuff. I actually was just listening to another podcast that was talking about Explosion and Veteran and Gamers, and it was cool. They liked it. Great. And the one dude said, you know, I hate Iron Maiden covers. And he goes, anything, and that's what I don't like about Explosion, but I liked everything else. And I was like, okay, well, that's, you know, that's even. That's what I'd expect. If you don't like Heavy Metal Magazine, then you probably won't like our art style. And that's just, you know, I don't like Liver and Onions. I mean.
Well, I think the good thing about your games is they're so mechanics driven. You know, there's so much original gameplay in them that you can enjoy it even if you hate the art style. I don't think that would be an impediment. And one thing I've noticed, and I've mentioned it to these guys on previous episodes, but every time I turn on a Mommy's Best Game title now, I'm conditioned to expect a certain pattern, which is that I've read about it and I sort of have an idea of how it's going to play and what the primary mechanics are. And 60 seconds into the game, I'm going to discover that there's some other mechanic that hasn't been talked about at all that is totally weird and out of nowhere and totally changes the way you play the game. With Weapon of Choice, it was the fact that, like, time slows down every time you're about to die and you have a chance to get out of the way. With Shoot One Up, it's the fact that you can use the shield to kill enemies, and that completely changes how the game is played, and it lets you get these ridiculous scores. And then in Explosionade, it's the fact that you can turn on the shield to bounce around the levels, and I love that kind of thing. I mean, it's just totally out of the blue. It's almost like, I need to fit one more idea in there that you probably weren't even expecting. And I really, really appreciate that. I mean, as a sort of gameplay mechanics guy, and it's not like you're throwing that stuff in there willy-nilly either. I mean, you've designed the game around that as well, and it's very much appreciated.
Well, I'm glad you like it. I mean, my only hope is Grapple Buggy gets so much coverage that you know everything about it when it comes out. And you're not surprised by anything. Yeah, I mean, like with Explosionade, I try to design gameplay in a really fluid manner, and I try to listen to, fuck, I'm sounding really cheesy right now. I don't know. I'm trying to like listen to my muse. I don't know, whatever. It's just like I was doing the shield. I was like, okay, clearly this thing needs a shield. I get that because you're a giant hulking mech, but I want kind of bullet hell stuff. Not really, but you know, I want a lot of bullets. So you definitely need a shield. And I don't know what it was. I just like, oh, what if you can just bounce around like a pinball? Okay. So just kind of jumped in there, and then we started designing the levels after that, you know, to fit that.
It's really cool stuff. And have you played Bangaio's Spirits on the DS?
Yes, and I love the shit out of that. Yeah. I mean,
Explosionade reminds me very clearly of that. It's more slow paced, but the shape of the levels and the kind of the way that you go through them and the way that you approach trying to get to the end of it, it reminds me a lot of that game.
That's awesome. It's great to hear. I mean, like the original Bangaio on when I played on the VCs, I loved it. And then that's kind of what I was going for. It was some kind of story to kind of pull you through. I like kind of story elements that aren't making you read and sit for too long. But I like when there's a little touch of extra depth. And then I like kind of the puzzly levels, and that's what I was shooting for with Explosionade. So it's really cool that it came through like that. And just thinking of Treasure, and on the Wii, man, I loved, you talked about mechanics, I loved Star Successor, Sin and Punishment 2.
Oh, yeah.
I just couldn't believe how amazing it was compared to so many other games that are still good, you know what I mean, the other games that I like playing in general. But just that balance where every single new creature that you went up against was like, okay, now this thing is going to be a dodge guy. And now he's doing like a sword attack thing. Oh no, now you gotta start shooting a bunch. And you know, now you gotta shoot his bombs back. And everything just kept changing around. It's super fun.
For sure. Regarding Grapple Buggy, can you give us an idea of where that's out, where that's at in development? And then also maybe some of the influences that you think about when you're designing that game and kind of what you hope it will be compared to?
So Grapple Buggy is like, someone's in the hospital and they had to spend the night. You know what I mean? Because they just had their appendix removed. So they had to spend the night. And then you're just like, oh, it's my loved one. I'll go visit them with flowers, even though it's, you know, not visiting hours. And you sneak past security, and you go into the room, and oh shit, your dad is on the table, and his chest is open, and his heart's exposed, and the doctor's over top of him, and he's working on him, and he looks at you, and he's like, what are you doing here? And the doctor's like, I'm sorry, I just had to work on this a lot. And you're just like, oh man, this is effed up. That's kind of where Grapple Buggy's at right now.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I think it sounds troubling, but I'm not sure.
No, basically Grapple Buggy is getting kind of a redo thing right now. Hmm. Because I've taken it to publishers and everybody's liked it and nobody's bought it. Hmm. So I'm just kind of like, okay guys, liking it and getting excited about it does not pay the bills. Right. So, you know, what's going on? So I'm kind of rethinking a bunch of different things, but trying to keep the core fun of buggy driving around, crazy grappling hooks, wild aliens, you know, exploration. Mm-hmm. But I'm redoing a lot. I'm keeping a lot of art, redoing a lot of things, so it should be entertaining.
Do you find that the publisher's feedback is constructive, or is it kind of like they, you know, do some of them seem to make, they want you to make it more generic, or they want you to make it more familiar to people who wouldn't normally play a game like that?
You know, it's a good question. It's usually so effing careful, it's completely useless. If they say anything, they'll just say, you know, the art, the sound effects, the story, and then the characters and the voice aren't right where we want them. And I'm like, that's almost everything. So, I don't even know what to do. You know, I mean, somebody told me that. Someone of the publishers told me that. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's good feedback. What would you do if you were, you know, you can't even get their attention after that. Unless they've kind of deigned to tell you one thing, you're gone. But nobody's, like, tried to compromise the game, which is unfortunate. Because I'd be willing to listen if they were going to pay us money. But they're just like, it's so insanely, uncomprehendingly competitive on the developer to publisher side. Mm-hmm. That basically, if you don't take them perfection, then they're just like, we don't want that. I mean, I don't know. Like, if it doesn't just immediately strike with them, then they just say no. They say, oh, this is really cool, I like this, but we're not going to, you know, get a pass, it's just not perfect. And you can't just say, well, you liked it. Why don't you kind of see me through with it? Why don't we, you know, keep it going?
It sounds like they're not really looking for fixer-uppers.
Yeah. I mean, there's just nothing like that. So I got a new idea for more sexy visuals, like a funny trick that I'm going to pull in the game and see if it works. And then frame rate shit and, you know, typical stuff like that. And also, I'm rethinking exploration in the game because I don't feel like it's rewarding enough. I feel like it's too arcadey, kind of too transparent. So I'm not a huge fan of key door stuff, no matter how much you obscure it.
Great. I agree.
You know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get out from underneath it. Everybody uses it. Yeah. But I'll see what I can do. I want to see if I can do something where it's like, you deal with the environment, you deal with the creatures, you deal with characters, something where you actually kind of influence things and kind of change things in an interesting fashion and explore that way rather than, you know, you need the red key.
I once had a really interesting conversation with Brian Walker, who's a producer over at Retro Studios, and he, I was talking to him about the idea of power-ups and how to design a power-up in a Metroid game, because it's mm-hmm. a very daunting challenge, you know. And I told him that my personal feeling was that power-ups shouldn't be glorified keys. Like, it's okay if mm-hmm. they open a door that was locked before, but they should also do something else. Like, it should be something
that, oh, yeah.
Like, the screw attack is the best example, and it's unfortunately also kind of broken in most of the games that it appears in. But the great thing about the screw attack is that once you get it, it changes the way you play the game all the time. And it's okay if there's certain blocks that can only be busted through with a screw attack, but that's not the only place you would want to use it.
Oh, yes. Fantastic. I totally agree. I mean,
those are probably the hardest ones to design, but they're also the most memorable to the player, and they're the ones that really make you feel like you're playing the game differently than you were before. That's really exciting to the player.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, and I take it to heart, because, I mean, like, the screw attack, and then, like, you look at Super Metroid, the grappling hook always irritated the shit out of me, because it was the way to use it. Like, you use it, like, three times, you know what I mean? Like, it's so obnoxious. And yet, I love Super Metroid. And so, but yeah, screw attack is great. I mean, the screw attack's probably influenced shield bounce and explosion, to be honest. Like, I love that kind of thing, so. With exploration, I don't know. I've been playing a bunch of Super Metroid. Super Galaxy Mario something something 2. Whatever that game's called.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. The sequel, I love it to pieces. And the only thing I didn't like, and this is kind of ridiculous, is, and this, in the first one the same way, I felt like the reward of exploration, the biggest reward they could offer you was a star. And so that meant new levels, which is exciting. But then when you're in the new level, it's like you're excited to get out of there as fast as possible to get a new star. You know what I mean? It's like, It just keeps trying to drag you through, and I don't know how to do it any other way. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just kind of funny that it's like the best reward you can have is a thing that makes you want to leave the level.
Well, I think in that game in particular, the linearity of the levels means that there's only one, well, effectively, there's only one thing you can do in that level, and then you leave and come back into the level again, and it's different for the sake of a different star. Whereas games where there's more exploration, you can pick up multiple whatever the object in question is in one particular experience in the level. You might it might feel more natural.
Okay, so let me ask you guys, one by one, if you don't mind. Yeah, you know, just give me a, just what's exploration to you in a game? Like, what's the most exciting thing about exploration?
Well, I mean, Johnny and I are both big Metroid guys. I think it is finding things that change the way you play, that have a broad base applicability that goes beyond just, you know, gets you from this point to another point, that it changes your experience from that point onwards. That for me is, you know, really exciting. And I don't know whether that, you know, belongs in a Mario game or not. It doesn't necessarily belong in every game.
I think that is in Mario games if you look at the power-up system. Because you don't have to have backtracking to have exploration, and you don't have to have backtracking to have upgrades. You know, like new abilities. And so one of the things I like in the Mario games is the fact you get all these suits and mushrooms and things like that. And it does sort of change the way you play the game from that point. And unfortunately, in the more recent Mario games, a lot of those have become timed, especially in the 3D Marios.
Yeah.
So you get the Fire Flower, and it's exciting because now you kind of have to play the game differently. You're thinking about trajectories and aiming and things like that. You know, where can I get to this piece of ice so I can melt it and get to the other side, but it's so contained. It's the other thing, like with Yoshi, they have Yoshi in Galaxy 2 and it's great, but you can only use them on certain levels. And it's fun to get something that permanently changes the way you play. And again, it's very hard to design a game that way, especially when you can go back and play earlier levels and stuff like that. You know, unless it's really straightforward, it's difficult to do that. But I think, I would have a similar response in that for me, exploration, the reward of exploration is getting new content, and it could either be a new place or a new enemy or a new ability. It could also be something that I've done before, but a variation on it that makes it feel completely fresh. And that's one of the fun things about the Metroid series for me, is that as you pick up all these abilities, you end up going through places that you've been before, but now you approach them in a completely different way. Not that the place has changed, but you've changed. And in some other games, it's the opposite. You're the same, but now the level's completely different, and now you have to go through that in a different way as well. So either way works. But that's really fun. And, you know, maybe from the developer side, it means you can reuse some assets. Maybe not.
I'm just talking about blue sky stuff. You know what I mean? Like, imagine like parkour. Like, why would anyone even explore in real life? Like hiking.
Right.
You kind of want to see amazing vistas. You want to go places you've never been.
That's more like it is for me. I like to go to places in games where maybe everybody who played this game never saw this place. That it's somewhere that I just found, and it sort of gives you a sense of ownership of the world you're in. Like, wow, this place is a secret between me, this game, and 128,000 other people who have played. But
I get you. Yeah.
But for the sake of the experience, this is my place. I have found it, and I am being rewarded with this.
Do you think that's easier to do in a 3D game?
I think it's easier to hide places in a 3D game, but there are plenty of 2D games that pull that off with, you know, like hidden exits in some Mario games and some 2D platformers. I mean, but there's more to it than that. In some 3D games, there's just places you just don't know they're there, and you just happen across them because you can't see it or it's a blind turn. I mean, Star Fox 64 has a good example of this, and that there are levels that to get through them you have to blow out those gates, and there's that warp gate level, and I didn't even know it was there for 2 years.
Sure, yeah. I
played the game for years and didn't even know they were there. And then suddenly I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
One of my favorite experiences is like in, and this, this could apply to a lot of RPGs, but the most memorable one for me is Dragon Quest VIII, which has this beautiful 3D world that you can sort of very freely explore, and actually your ability to explore it increases as the game goes on. But I love going out to like some little peninsula or kind of looking behind a mountain and finding a treasure chest there that some designer has left, because it's almost like that it's a moment where I make a connection with the guy who's designing the game. Because I get to that place and I thought, cool. There's this really cool little nook over here. If I was making this game, I would put something cool there for the player who found it. And you go there and you find that that's actually what happened. And it's a little bit of a strange psychological effect, but it feels so cool to be rewarded for going out and finding something like that, you know? And it's fun to do it.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's good feedback, guys. Honestly, I mean, some of that was where I was heading, but it was good original stuff. I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I wanted it to be fun. Grapplebug would be fun that way, and I think it was already fun, but I kind of just needed to rethink the exploration and make sure it's as satisfying as we could make it.
Actually, on that note, Nathan, one of the main things I wanted to ask you is, since you make all these 2D games, and especially these sort of old-school feeling games, would you ever consider doing something maybe a little more long-form, like an adventure game or an RPG?
It's definitely not out of the question, but I don't want to screw it up. I mean, like, you know, I mean, like, it's funny. I like some games, but I don't know if I'd be a good designer of them. Mm-hmm. I do like adventure games. I do like RPGs, actually. I don't always get to play new RPGs, but I like them, but I just don't know if I would do as good a job. So we'll see how that turns out. I mean, actually, one of my favorite franchises of all time is Wipeout. So the racing game, you know, I love basically racing games with weapons. I don't know if I'll ever get to work on one, but I've always wanted to, but I probably wouldn't have Mommy's Best Games do one, because we're just not into that. But yeah, we'll see. An adventure game would be kind of cool.
Well, in terms of platforms, obviously the three games that you've got out right now for Mommy's Best Games are all on the Xbox Indie platform, and then Grapple Buggy, you're shooting for Xbox Live Arcade, right?
That's the hope.
Obviously, you're working on XNA, so I'm sure that was a big incentive for you to go towards that platform. But have you considered some of the other digital distribution platforms? And if you have, I wonder, are there disadvantages to something like WiiWare, for instance, that would make it very hard for you to work on it?
Well, to be honest, like, WiiWare is not super attractive, because I think initially Nintendo made a big stink out of you have to have a non-home permanent address for your office. Seriously, you know, so, and we just don't, like, I work out of my home office, like, it's, you know, a room in the house, and it works out fine, and we have other people come in here and work for me, other programmers, and nobody's, you know, died yet, it's been okay, but, and we're still solvent, so, I don't know, but Nintendo seems to not be so hot on that, so, we haven't applied for that, mainly because it seems like that's not going to work out, at least not initially, and then the other thing is, I'm just put off by, I think, the small game size you can have, and then also, yeah. I'm scared of the texture restrictions in terms of memory. I don't have definitive proof that it's really difficult to work on, but I'm a little worried about it, mainly just because I think outside of Muramasa, you know, Demon Blade, I don't think there's many games that have pushed sprites really hard on the Wii.
Well, there's Kirby now, which I guess it's using sprites. It's using...
Yeah, no, you're right. That's true. It's a good point. I forgot about Kirby's Yarn.
Yeah, but Kirby is, like, made of magic as far as I can tell. It just doesn't look like anything else I've ever seen.
It's insane. It's so gorgeous looking. I saw it at E3 last year. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, the only game that really looks close to it is Little Big Planet, and that's done with high definition polygons and, you know, actual textures and everything. So, yeah. It's just a completely different method.
I hope the Kirby game does well. That'd be so awesome. Oh, you know, Boy in His Blob. Durr. About that one. Sorry.
Wariland, of course.
Okay. Yeah. Shake it. I got that one too. Of course. Yeah. That one's really good, man. That looks pretty.
Yeah.
But again, it's just like, I don't know how much harder you have to work on the Wii to get sprites to work. So, I mean, they're not to do it, you know, not to work, but just to get a lot of oomph out of them, to pump a lot through. So, I've, at least currently, I'm sort of put off of the Wii, unfortunately, but, that could change, for sure. And then, the DS, I've just never been a big handheld person, unfortunately. I like my TV, I like sitting on the couch looking at the TV, so. You know, I really like all the exciting stuff, like Shantae and stuff coming out on DSi, but unfortunately, it's just not where my heart is, so probably nothing there yet.
Well, before we run out of time, I wanted to bring up 8-Bit Horse, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about what that is and how it got started.
Yeah, sure. 8-Bit Horse is a website, the number 8, like the B-I-T, and I don't know if it's in the horse's mouth, but anyway, it's 8-Bit Horse. It's 8bithorse.com, and it's a game devoted solely to 2D action games. It's very specific. But with that in mind, there's a lot of games to go through. So we cover heritage games, current 2D, and upcoming 2D. So, for instance, Super Meat Boy's on there, Shank is on there, Shantae is on there, but we're doing Demon's Crest, is, you know, an old Super NES game,
awesome.
La Mulana, yeah, La Mulana's on there, and lots of 2D games that we try to cover, and basically we started it as a cross-promotional thing for Mommy's Best Games. I mean, we put that right up front. We talk about our games on there, you know, but we don't offer reviews, we just offer gameplay analysis. And basically the entire game, we cut up the whole game, and look at everything in the game, and learn about everything in there. It's like a giant walkthrough spoiler thing. It's not reviews, like some people think. It just analyzes these 2D games and gives you, it's like a, you know, a big library.
It's more like a visual Wikipedia, I would say, of a very specific kind of video game.
Cool, yeah, I mean, that's a great point. It's like, basically, we weren't happy either with any of the sources for 2D games. Like, even in Wikipedia, a lot of the articles on there are too short. You know, half the time, you know, Contra Rebirth gets mentioned, or Hardcore Uprising gets mentioned on Kotaku, and then it's gone. Like, and somebody kind of just has some kind of quip, you know, about it on there, and it's gone. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about them, the site's set up really simply. This is giant lists of games, and they're always on there, they never go away, and if you want to look up a game, you just scroll down there, you know, and read about it in extreme detail. And we try to cover new games, too. That's the other part is, we wanted it to be a place that you can go to find out about new 2D games.
Yeah, and just to give the listeners an idea of what the site's like, I think the first time I went there, I saw the logo for Shatterhand. And that says it all,
true.
You know?
Yeah, it's 8bithorse.com. Shatterhand is on there from the NES. It's probably the most comprehensive Shatterhand article on the web.
Can only imagine.
It's kind of a site just for us. I say us because it's AJ Johnson. He's the story and dialogue writer for Mommy's Best Games, and he does all the writing basically for those articles.
And on that note, before we go, are there any upcoming 2D games that you're really hyped about and maybe you want to tell people about that they might not have heard of?
Probably the only thing I can think of that I'm super hyped about is Bangai on Missile Fury.
Sure.
I'm really excited to play Guanga on XBLA from Cave, kind of just to see what's happening there. I've never really played it, so it's a shoot 'em up. It's like in a kind of medieval fantasy theme, and Bangayo, and then Super Meat Boy I'm going to play. It's funny, like AJ and I were just talking, a lot of the games we've been talking about are starting to come out. So Shank's come out, you know, Super Meat Boy's coming out, Scott Pilgrim.
Shantae's out. Finally.
Yeah, and now we're just kind of like, well, I guess the new best thing in the world is going to just be Grapple Buggy. And that's it.
Yeah. Well, you got a Hardcore Uprising to look for.
Yeah.
I don't know, but
good
it's
point.
Actually going to have to do with the Genesis game. But
yeah, no. Hardcore Uprising, honestly, we won't cover that on 8-Bit Horse. That's how specific we are. We only cover Sprite games. But I mean, I'm definitely going to play the shit out of that because I played it at E3 and it was fun. For me, honestly, it's a little filled out, a little padded out, I guess. But still liked it, you know? I'm just being super critical. I still liked it, and I'll probably play it a lot.
I'm sure, I mean, you know, you wouldn't cover stuff like New Super Mario Bros. Wii or Donkey Kong Country Returns, but it has the sort of tagline of where 2D lives. And I think for everyone that makes 2D games, it must be quite exciting that Nintendo, who has the most successful platform this generation, is going to go back-to-back years with 2D gameplay as their big holiday title.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Got to be a good sign for the fact that this gameplay style is going to endure.
Oh, I think that's perfect. I mean, like you said, endure. I don't see how there's any reason why when movies come out, people stop reading books. You know what I mean? Like 2D and 3D can get along, basically.
Cool. All right, Nathan, we'll got to let you go, but thank you so much for being here and telling us about your games and a lot of other games, too. And, of course, we have recommended, and we'll continue to recommend that people check out Mommy's Best Games, especially if you have an Xbox. But even if you're not, it's worth going to watch the videos, I think. Steal one. That works, too.
Yeah. Super. Thanks a lot for having me, guys. It was a blast.
So thanks to Nathan very much for coming and talking to us. And now we're going to take a quick break and come back with your listener mail, as promised. Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
we got a lot of reviews this week. Neil has a review of Kirby's Epic Yarn, which he gives a 10. He notes that it's pretty a lot, repeatedly.
Pretty like blankets.
Pretty like blankets.
Pants.
Nathan has a review of Etrian Odyssey 3, The Drowned City. It's part roguelike, which, as we've established on the show, means it's terrible, but he seems to like it a lot anyway. Poor man. Supposedly it's rewarding, but like we said, it's part roguelike, so that's patently false.
Oh, James. All right. So, Zach has a review of Spider-Man Shattered Memories for Wii. Oh, wait, no, Shattered Dimensions for Wii.
Well done.
Little inside, sorry. Johnny talked about it on DS. Here it is on Wii. Zach likes to swing with webs, and Zach likes this game, all four dimensions of it. It has time. The Virtual Console recommendations return this week, and this time we have recommendations for Zelda Majora's Mask, Kirby Superstar, and Super Star Wars. So check out old games.
You want blog posts? Here's your stinking blog posts. Carl has an open letter to Silicon Knights in which he breaks the comic book guy Gale with advice for Dennis Dyack's development team of their new title, X-Men Destiny. No mention of camera angles. Yet.
But it does have... that is a blog post. I'll just tell you, click on all the links because they will take you to some hilarious places. I'm serious.
That's frightening.
I'm serious.
I'm scared.
A somewhat more extensive blog post, Carly got to indulge in some wish fulfillment, visiting Rare Limited's offices for their Kinect Sports Community Day. She has a great write-up of the day at the venerable developer HQ, some cool pictures from their office, and some impressions from the surprisingly engrossing Kinect Sports. So, if you've ever wondered what giant statues of the original Banjo design look like... You will find it in that
considerably less square than the current Banjo design.
Okay, so be sure to head over to NintendoWorldReport.com and check out all this great original content. Okay, well, we are back for listener mail, and the address, of course, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and we've got a few quick ones here. We couldn't spend a whole hour on mail like we sometimes do, but I guaranteed personally that we'd have mail coming back this week, and certainly we do. James has the
first
letter.
And I threatened to walk off the set if we didn't.
Yeah.
The set.
Morkant writes, "Hey fellows, I'm a new listener to RFN, and I have been enjoying not only the new episodes, but some of the shows from your back catalog as well. I wanted to drop you a quick line and thank you for the Ocarina of Time anniversary special you did a couple years back. Even as an avid podcast listener with some 10 shows to which I subscribe, I can say with confidence that this was the best couple hours of listening I have experienced in a long while. It really brought me back to that very magical period of gaming and made me appreciate a game that I already held in extremely high regard. I'm now looking forward to Skyward Sword all the more. Do you have any plans to do more specials like this as an additional seminal game anniversary approaches?" Well, we missed one, so we're not going to do Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah. We could do it anytime we want.
Yeah.
You mean anytime I actually get around to doing all the work for it? This is what happens.
Well, Greg, you're so good at the planning for those. I wouldn't want to take it away from you. It's true.
That's it.
It's true, basically. No, Greg deserves a lot of credit for doing a lot of the background work for that Ocarina of Time special, as well as a lot of the other special features that we do on the show. It's been a while since we did an entire episode devoted to a single game. There's the one for Super Metroid at one point, wasn't
there?
That was
about 18 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's been quite a while. And, of course, we did an entire episode about the N64.
Yeah, no,
that was
yeah.
A very long time ago.
Johnny did an entire episode about the N64, yes.
89.
It's called When I'm 64, or When I'm N64, excuse me. But actually, we got a lot of great feedback after we did that Ocarina of Time episode, and that's actually what inspired us to start the retroactive feature, because we realized that the real magic there, and partly it's because the game itself is important and, you know, memorable and very complex and deep with a lot to talk about. And of course, we all have an emotional connection to it.
And of course, more Evan Birchfield, less James and John for different reasons.
Yes, for technical reasons there, yes.
No, I just wasn't there that week, right?
You weren't there.
Oh, yeah, okay. I was traveling that week.
John was there, but then he wasn't.
Yes.
But the other thing that we realized is part of what made that episode so much fun and so effective is that we were all talking about the same game. And that's something that we realized we didn't do enough on the show. And so Retroactive is sort of a way that we came up with to sort of force us all to play a game together every now and then and actually talk about it on the show. And not only that, but everybody listen, well, not everybody, but a portion of the listeners also play it as well. And so everybody comes in with a common level of understanding of what's going on, and it lets us get to a deeper level of conversation about the game.
Results on that front are a little mixed.
Okay, well, that's the intent. Fair enough. That's the intent. I don't know how deep we got on Ninja Spirit, but...
Well, no, we got to the 20 seconds of awkward silence on Ninja Spirit. That was wonderful.
I remember it more fondly than you do, James.
Yeah, well, that's because you already did one of the 2 weeks.
Oh, wow, we did 2 weeks on Ninja Spirit?
It was really quick, the second
that's
one.
Okay. It was really like, anybody have anything to say about this game? No. Okay.
It was mainly because more forum comments had come. The first week, there weren't many.
Right.
The second week, there were more, so it was like, if we wanted to have them at all, we would have to.
I think it was mostly us groaning, going, do we really have to talk about Ninja Spirit again?
I got to cut in a sound effect afterwards.
We did get to talk about the wolf mother thing. That was fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I hope that we do this again. I don't know if we'll ever do another, like, full-length episode about some game's anniversary. We probably will. Just depends on what comes up. You know, Super Mario Brothers just had the big 25-year thing, and we sort of missed out on the timing on that, but we could still go back and do it sometime if we want to. I don't know that we can do an entire episode about Super Mario Brothers, but...
Yeah, certainly some games lend themselves to it better than others, irrespective of their quality or importance.
Right. I mean, Ocarina is a 40-hour game. There's a lot to talk about there. But I would love to do it again, and in the meantime, you know, we try to capture some of that magic with Retroactive every time. So the best thing you can do for that is vote on an interesting game and play it and participate in the conversation and let us know what you want us to talk about. That's the best thing I can suggest. But thank you very much for the comment, and hope we'll do it again sometime. Greg has the next letter.
Okay, Andrew/Zero writes, hey guys, recently you were talking about how Nintendo often separates story and gameplay, and couldn't think of many examples to the contrary. I think you missed a big one though, Star Fox 64. At the time, it was one of the most cinematic games Nintendo had ever done, but more so, most of the dialogue took place within the actual gameplay. Sure, there was generally a short cutscene at the start of each stage, but then within the stage, there were a ton of real-time events scattered throughout, and there was constant back-and-forth chatter in regard to these events. You entered the stages never quite knowing what to expect. Sadly, Nintendo seems to have abandoned Star Fox, or at least turned the franchise into a B-lister. I'd like to see them bring back the type of events-driven in-game dialogue again, though.
Mea culpa.
Well, no, to be fair to Johnny, he actually spoke about that very thing in Star Fox the week before the episode.
Yeah, I know I've talked about it before, but...
With respect to Sin and Punishment, you know, the difference between the two, that you couldn't imagine such things going on in that game because it's just too crazy.
Yeah.
I bet the big distinction being the level of quality of storytelling is in Star Fox 64 is not supreme. I mean...
It's kind of like a Saturday morning cartoon, which is fine. I would like, if they did it again now, I'd want them to do a better job of it. But at the time, it was impressive, and I enjoyed it a great deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of voice for an N64 game.
Yes. Oh, it was eventful at the time. I mean, it really was. Mm.
It would have been eventful years later on the N64. I mean, that is a lot of voice for the N64.
And also, the big thing around that time, and this was something, you know, Nintendo was publicizing this quite a bit, and there was a lot of media chatter as well, was that the fact that Star Fox 64 used real-time cutscenes, which, of course, were almost a necessity on N64 because it didn't have the file capacity for FMV, which was the format du jour. But, of course, Star Fox used real-time cutscenes very effectively, and those are now more the standard, whereas FMV is almost kind of a novelty at this point. You don't see it as much. of course, the cost of doing FMV has come down a lot, and the cost to ship it on your disk has come down a lot too. So it's easier to do now, but you can do so much more with real time. And Star Fox didn't take advantage of all the different things you can do, you know, like changing the character models depending on what's happened and stuff like that. But
they put sunglasses on Fox, damn it.
Yeah, it was well done. It was well done.
I wouldn't go that far.
I like the chatter, but I mean, you know, no one plays Star Fox for the story. And I think it's a nice enhancement, and it helps give the game a lot of personality.
Can't let you do that, Star Fox.
It's a very quotable game, for sure.
And apparently it is. As I've said before, I missed out on all this because I had the Japanese one.
Oh, yeah. It really does have some horrifying voice acting. I mean, when you go back and play it, you'll bust up laughing every time somebody opens their mouth.
Yeah.
It's like you want to make sure all your characters survive, not because of the bonus, but because you don't want to spoil the opportunity to hear them say something stupid.
Yeah, and I think there's some story stuff in Star Fox Armada. Is that the one on GameCube?
I think it ended up being called Assault.
Assault,
yeah, it was
okay.
Assault. Because Armada would have been a horribly ironic name, considering half of it's on the ground.
It's very forgettable. I mean, I remember one mission where you kind of have to walk into a cave, walk into a cave and rescue someone or something. So, I mean, they tried to build up a story to explain that game's events, but it's completely forgettable. And then in the DS game, which is very good, Star Fox Command, there's really no story at all that I recall. I mean, there might be some kind of comic book style.
There's dialogue between... It seems to... I had the Japanese of that as well, actually.
But
there's a lot of babbling between missions in that.
But nothing during the missions, nothing like Star Fox 64.
Because it's a much less scripted game, because it's all range mode. And
right.
So, as the email said about you're tying it to specific events or something, it's not going to be as big as that, because it is just a lot of the time you're going around this little field and you're killing a bunch of enemies. It's not that sort of roller coaster ride that Star Fox was.
It'll be really interesting, you know, since it appears that Nintendo is going ahead with the full remake of Star Fox 64 on 3DS. We've seen that they're replacing a lot of the textures. They seem to be actually upping the polygon counts and a lot of the 3D models. So it'll be really interesting to see if they tweak the gameplay, number one, and number two, if they do anything story-wise. I mean, they could replace the voice acting, or maybe if they're afraid of an outcry or a backlash from that, maybe they could just add more of it. Maybe they're going to add more stages, which would then probably necessitate new story elements to those stages. So, I don't know. I mean, it's a chance for them to go back, and maybe we'll actually get a chance to see what they would do if they made that game now, because they are.
I think they're going to leave in the original kind of story stuff, because that's part of that game's allure. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can't take out the do a barrel roll comment. They just can't. I mean, it would not be that game without it. I think they'd probably just leave it alone, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't really think they'll take anything out, but they might add some stuff to it.
It would be hard to capture the terribleness of that particular game's writing.
Someone at Capcom probably knows how to do it.
I don't know. They fired most everybody.
You know, I mean, certainly we've talked a number of times on this show about how they should probably do a new Star Fox, you know, more like Star Fox 64. And, you know, maybe 3DS is the right platform for that. Maybe they don't want to put the money into making a big console production of it. But I would love to see them take that same formula, update it for now, obviously do some things with the gameplay to make it new and innovative. But I would love to see them go back and do the story scenes and the voice acting, you know, the little messages intercom during the missions, and just do it better, do it new, and bring that series into the current day a little bit. I'd love to see that. But moreover, I'd love to see, like, you know, new levels and new graphics and just new Star Fox gameplay. I'd love to see that. But for now, we got nothing.
I still think it's a kind of sad commentary when Star Fox 64 is the deepest penetration into this kind of storytelling.
Yeah, that was 13 years ago, by the way.
Yes.
That's the closest thing they have to Uncharted is Star Fox 64. Ugh. Okay, the final letter for this week is from Dan from State College, Pennsylvania, and he writes, I know past Kirby games have been slower paced, but I've really enjoyed them because you can play it quickly if you're always running and avoiding enemies rather than swallowing and shooting puffs of air at them. My concern with Epic Yarn is how slow it looks in the gameplay videos. From a panel of Nintendo-based gamers whose opinions I trust, how have you guys felt about the mechanics of Epic Yarn? I can't find much about this, since everyone is raving about how it looks, but not necessarily how it plays. Now, I think I'm the only one of us who's actually played the final version, at least, right? But we've all played demos.
Yeah.
Well, I've played a few hours of Kirby's Epic Yarn now, and of course I'm enjoying it quite a bit. But in terms of pace, I think it's about as fast as Wario Land Shake It, except that there's nothing to compare to the chase sequences, the escape sequences in Wario.
Right, yeah.
And you know, Wario also had those chambers that you would go into and that would, you know, make you come out running full blast. There's nothing like that either. So, there are, however, sections where you know, some of the transformations, like for instance, you turn into a race car. And those sections are pretty fast. They're not difficult at all. But, you know, they reasonably fast, and you have to make some quick decisions on multiple pathways and stuff like that. It's certainly not a Twitch game, and I think that's probably partly because of the, you know, the younger demographic that they're really trying to capture with this. Wario Land Shake It, I mean, I love it, certainly, but it's not probably not the most accessible game for a kid. And so, you know, with Kirby, it doesn't really surprise me that they've slowed it down a little bit. I'd say Kirby's movement is not necessarily that slow. I mean, you can always double tap and turn into the little car, and that's pretty zippy, but the nature of the game's design is such that you probably don't want to do that all the time, because for one thing, if you're playing the game the right way, to go back to a phrase we used a lot last week with Yoshi's Story, you know, you're trying to get the medals. You're trying to get a gold medal on every stage. And in order to do that, you need to minimize the number of times you get hit. Obviously, you can't die, but every time you get hit, it's kind of like in a Sonic game. All your jewels spray out, and you have to go try to recollect them. And, you can usually recollect almost all of them unless you're over like a lava pit or something, and some of them might wash away. But you certainly don't want to get hit, because it just makes it that much harder to get the gold medal. And because of that, you probably want to play a little more cautiously. You don't have to, but there are threats. I mean, there are, what are they called, the Waddle Dees that have the electrical beam that kind of goes down in an arc.
Oh, yeah, I know what you want to mean.
Those guys will catch you by surprise if you don't approach them carefully. There are enemies that shoot bow and arrows at pretty tricky angles, you know, like places where you're jumping towards them. You have to jump towards them, but they're shooting arrows at you, and if you don't time it right, they will shoot an arrow right into your face as you approach them. So if you're, I mean, it's not a hard game by any means, and I think everybody's pretty clear on that, but if you play it really recklessly, you will get hits that you shouldn't otherwise. And it might actually be interesting eventually to see some kind of speed run of this game.
Yeah, sure.
Because I think if you kind of blast through the game as fast as possible, it would make it very difficult to get to the end without dying. I mean, well, not without dying, but without getting hit.
Wait a minute, no, it wouldn't.
It would be very difficult to play the game fast and get a high score. That'd be interesting. I mean, there's no timer, there's no game clock, so the game doesn't incentivize you to play quickly, and maybe that's also part of the reason. But you certainly could challenge yourself. So it's overall, I would say yes, it is somewhat slower than Wario, which wasn't that fast to begin with. But it's also a little more exploration based, and quite frankly, because of the graphical style, I think they're trying to encourage you to kind of slow down and smell the roses, as it were.
Sure. Yeah, it looks like that.
There's so much detail in the presentation that you could easily miss if you just blaze through it. So it is kind of nice to just take a stroll through the level and pay attention to it a little more, you know? Hopefully that answers your question. I certainly would recommend the game regardless. But if you like a really fast-paced platformer, you might be better off with something like Super Meat Boy, which is breakneck. Just ridiculously paced.
What would you say how it sort of flows compared to something like Yoshi's Story? Because, I mean, I've got a pretty broad tolerance for different kinds of platformers, as long as, you know, there's a certain kind of flow to it. You know, maybe it's not so much about the actual pace as much as it kind of has some sort of consistent flow to the action. So how would you compare it in that regard?
I think the flow is fine in Kirby, because the levels are basically point A to point B, and it rarely opens up so much that you're not sure where to go. there are certainly nooks and crannies all over the place that you know, they're optional for the most part, but there are places that you can wander off to, but usually you won't have to go very far in that direction before you get the prize and then you get back on the main path. So, I certainly have thought about Yoshi's Story quite a bit, and it makes me actually really glad that I played that before I got Kirby. And I'd say Kirby compares very favorably to Yoshi's Story because there certainly are similarities.
That's a high standard.
Yeah, well, there certainly are similarities, but Kirby just feels so much more directed. It feels so much more Nintendo-like. It feels so much more like an action game, quite frankly.
Much less like a shopping trip.
Exactly. There is an end of the level, and that's where you're headed. And that alone just makes it feel tighter.
Mm.
It's certainly not as tense, not as breakneck as Wario Land Shake It could be at times, especially in the escape sequences, which are really twitchy. I mean, there's a lot of places where in order to get to the end by the target time, you pretty much have to run the entire way, you know, catching every single one of the little boost boxes and boost pads,
yeah,
running up
ducking
walls
at the right time,
right, sliding under things, skipping across the water. It's very much like Bit Trip Runner, if you think about it. And
it is a little, yeah.
Yeah. And there's nothing like that in Kirby that I've seen. And I wouldn't expect there to be. It's just so, that would be so incongruous with the rest of the game. Okay, well, that's all the mail we can fit in this week. Thanks to everybody for writing. And, of course, if you haven't sent in your letter lately, you can send that to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Of course, we also recommend that you check out Nathan's games over at Xbox Live Marketplace if you have the capability to do so. The titles, again, are Weapon of Choice, Shoot One Up, and Explosionade, and be on the lookout for Grapple Buggy sometime in 2011. I'm very excited about it. I have a couple of new episodes of Discover Music Project. If you haven't checked that out yet, I would encourage you to do so. I've been getting some really nice feedback and some good suggestions as well on the first couple episodes, and they're starting to back up in my backlog for editing now. So I'm really excited about where we're headed with that show. You can catch those over at crosstalk.com. That's Crosstalk with a W, or search for it on iTunes. And we have a new retroactive poll. By the time you hear this, it'll be up there. We're probably going to have a shorter voting period this time just because most of the people who voted last time voted in the first week. So I'm thinking we might run it for like a week and a half or something like that. We'll see. Anyway, we talked previously that it would probably be a second chance poll, and I looked at the records. It's actually not time for one of those yet. We would only have like three or four games in the poll if we did that. So we're actually going to do the DS edition next time. I know it's not super retro, but the system is on its way out. Some of these games are pretty old. So the nominees for the new retroactive poll are... These games are all for DS, of course. They're all, I checked on, they're all fairly easy to get. Shouldn't be too expensive. Soul Bubbles. Hotel Dusk. Room something something something. Lunar Nights. The World Ends With You. And Advance Wars Days of Ruin. Not Dual Strike. Days of Ruin. It's the newer one.
Oh, if in Europe, that's Dark Conflict.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
Good to know. So there you go. I think any of these would be interesting to talk about, and none of them are super popular or well-known, so I think it'll work out pretty well no matter what wins. So please go check that out. Go vote. It's the polls over at NintendoWorldReport.com. You should find a link on the main page, hopefully. If not, go to the forums, podcast discussion. Bam! It's right there. All you have to do is log in and vote. And you get to decide what we will play. John will play it too, I'm pretty sure.
No, he won't.
I think he will. I think he will. All right, that's all for the show this week. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Nathan has a review of Aterian Odyssey 3.
It's not Aterian. It's
whatever. Aterian. It's fine.
Aterian.
No one's gonna play this game anyway.
Starting again to get it right. I'm not fucking with that. To get it right.
Nathan has his review of Aterian Odyssey. Shut up. You want to say it, Johnny?
I'll say it, and then Greg can splice it back over the top of your mangling. How about
good.
That?
Perfect.
It's Aterian. It's not that hard to say.
Fine.